All right. Fabulous. Wonderful to see you all. Great. We have three states that are represented here. Love it. It's fabulous. But tonight, I was thinking earlier this afternoon, what should I do? What mitzvah should we do? Should we move to another room or should we stay in the bathroom? That just sounds wrong. But I decided we should stay in the bathroom a little longer. You'll understand why. You're like, okay, what other business does Rabbi T have to take care of?
I'm
So
so glad you're recording.
there is actually another mitzvah associated with the bathroom. It's not exclusive, but I think most of us do actually perform this activity if you partake of it, specifically in the bathroom. And that is
Washing your hands,
shaving.
washing your hands.
Shaving. Especially
Shaving.
us people who grow facial hair. But even not, this mitzvah applies to you because there are two mitzvahs related to how we get haircuts and shave. And you're like, really?
Oh,
There's a
no.
mitzvah about haircuts and shaving. Yes, there is, believe it or not. Let's start with basics. Let's start with a basic one. It has been a long-standing tradition that Jews keep sideburns. We do leave our sideburns longer, and we don't shave or take haircuts and destroy all of the hair that is, we'll call, equal to the temple, right above the ear, right above the ear. We do not, I'm going to be careful here. There's two mitzvos here. There's the mitzvah that we call peyos. Most of you know that word. Peyos has the long, curly things that the Hasidim wear, and right? Well, that's a borrowed term. The word peya in the singular actually means corner, corner, which we'll talk about in a minute. But we are forbidden in the Torah, it says you are not allowed to round off the corners of the hair of your head. That's a literal translation. Lo takifu, you shall not make round off, ta'at roshchem, the peyos of your head, which our sages teach us is this area right here. For argument's sake, let's just play it simple without getting into too much detail. If you put your finger right in the center of this, where the jawbone meets, right, even with the opening in your ear, there's a bone. That's the point. Anything above that shall not be cut off. Meaning the hair that grows, again, excluding this part, you know, this I have an exemption for. I didn't actually do it myself. This is just au naturel. But the hair on the side of my head, which still grows, one is forbidden to round off, to shave it to a point of where, I don't know, it used to be a style. Certainly in the old days, it was a pagan haircut of where they would basically imagine put a bowl on your head and just draw a circle around. That's what they had. We are not allowed to do that. We cannot shave off the sides of our head, the sideburns. Now, it's interesting how exactly it works and what the details are. Maybe we'll get to. But on a simple, simple, simple level, I think even nowadays, if you look at some of the pictures of some of the like monks have, they cut their hair right above the ear. They don't have sideburns. They have like a round cut, a bowl cut, they call it. That the Torah forbids us. If you're looking, Monroe's probably cheating. He's looking it up already in the Chumash, and it's in chapter 19, verse 27. I'm just saying, okay? Lo takifu pa'ast roshchem. You're not allowed to round off the corners of the hair of your head. And mitzvah number two, the lo tashchit et pa'at zikanecha. Nor shall you shave the corners of your beard. Now, wait, don't jump on me. I can see Charles is up in arms already. Slow down, Chuck. I got this. Okay? I didn't say you have to have a beard. I didn't say that. What it says is you're not allowed to round off the corners of your head or the corners of your beard. That's what the Torah says. In both cases, it uses the word corners. So just by a show of hands, how many of you have never heard of this before? No concept, no clue whatsoever.
I mean, a whole bunch of you. The beard part, not the hair part, the beard part.
Okay. So then I'm going to pretend nobody knows anything. Okay? Don't take offense if you already know this, but I'm going to assume you don't, and I'll explain to the best of my ability what we're talking about. Okay. I started to say that in the pagan, in the old religious cultures, they used to have that haircut. And the Torah forbids us to do it like that. We have to be distinct, not just in how we act, but also how we dress, how we conduct ourselves. Even in our external presentation, we are different. And therefore, the Torah says you cannot round off. Again, I'm talking specifically now about the corners of your head. Similarly, the Torah then says you're not allowed to shave or round off, or it says really shave, the corners of your beard. Now, ladies, first of all, this does not apply to you. You do not have this prohibition. I will say it outright. If it happens to be that a lady has a certain amount of hair that they want to get rid of, it is not a problem whatsoever. Not an issue. This is specifically for those who normally grow a beard. Women are excluded from that. Even if you may find an exception, especially one who, whatever, they grow hair, not a problem. Women are allowed to take that off, no issue. For men, though, there is a definite prohibition. Now, I want to be very clear. The Torah, when it says about the beard, you're not allowed to shave it off, it means with a razor. With a razor. Why? As opposed to with scissors. There is a difference in halacha whether you trim, shave with scissors versus a razor on your beard. What is the difference? Both cases, you're trimming and shaving off the hair that grows. Anybody want to venture a guess?
You can't take a sharp instrument to yourself.
No, not necessarily. We'll see. Hold on to that thought, Wayne. But tell me what is a practical difference if I go ahead and I shave with scissors versus a razor on my face.
With scissors, are you cutting it? Something
yes.
Of cutting?
But what
electricity?
No, let's say in the old days we didn't have electricity.
Just scissors. True.
So you're cutting, you can control the length maybe more because you're
cutting. Okay, go ahead, Robin. Go ahead. Which do you think is a closer shave?
The razor.
Razor, hands down. Not even a question. The razor cut is literally as close to the skin as possible, to the extent that the Torah views that, even though it will grow back, but the mere act of taking a razor against the skin is as if you have gotten rid of it, totally destroyed the hair. Now, yes, it will grow back, but there's a difference as opposed to a scissor cut. A scissor cut is good, but it still leaves a little bit of stubble. It's not as close a shape. And the Torah, one second, Fred. The Torah, when the Torah forbids shaving the corners of your beard, it means specifically with a razor. As opposed to when I talk about not destroying the corners of your head up here, right? That it doesn't specify. There it's just rounding. It doesn't say you can't shave. I want to be careful in the terminology. I'll read the verse again. Hold on, Susan. I'll get there. The wording in the Torah is, you shall not round off the corners of the hair of your head, neither shall you shave the corners of your beard. You hear that, whether you understand it or not, but you hear two different words. One says not to round, and the other says don't shave or destroy. Using a razor on the beard, beard area is considered destruction. It is a shave to the closest degree possible without physically pulling it out. That the Torah forbids. Now, when I say the corners, let's clarify. Okay? I told you to touch right by your temples that bone. Okay? If I could just turn sideways there. There's basically this part above the bone and above is called the corner of your head. But from the bone to your chin, and then from the other side, this bone to your chin, you basically have 5 points. From the bone to the jaw, right? The base of your jaw to your chin. There's basically 5 points. These are called the corners of your beard. This area from your temple bone all the way through to your chin is considered the corners of your beard. You may not use a razor from these temple bones all the way down to your chin. Basically, what we do as a beard, you can't shave with a razor. That's the bottom line. Can I use a razor? Let's say I want in the back of my neck. And the barber says to me, hey, I want to be able to, you got a hairy neck. I want to use a razor to clear out, you know, the forest back there. My answer is go for it. No problem. That's not the corner of my head and it's not the corner of my beard. Can I use a razor on my legs? Not that I would, but can I? The answer is yes. Can I use a razor on any other part of my body to shave the hair? The answer is yes. Again, I'm not advocating for or against. I'm just stating the facts now. Okay? The only place the Torah forbids using an actual razor is the beard area.
Put me on mute.
Go ahead, Liz.
Aren't there men who are clean shaven?
Whoa, time out. Of course there can be clean shaven men. I can't, listen, I have some wonderful people here on this call. I can't go ahead and just rip them to shreds, at least not publicly. Of course. But you know how the observant people who are clean shaven? They use a scissor action. Remember, I told you, the only thing that's actually forbidden in the beard area is a razor. Hey, have you ever seen me? One second, Arlene. Liz, have you ever seen me trim my beard? Not physically while I'm doing it, but you've seen that I trim my beard. And you know that I clean up well underneath the neck, right? Underneath the chin. I don't let it become scruffy. How do I do it? You've never been there. Why? Because it's in the bathroom. That's why this mitzvah we're talking about. You're not there with me. I don't use a razor. I use an electric shaver. You say, oh, but what's the difference? An electric shaver. Let me educate you all. Because nobody even thinks about this if you don't know about this mitzvah. There are two kinds of electric shavers. There are those that are called a razor cut. And there are those that are called a scissor cut. Like, really? Oh, yes. Remington and what is it? Braun. They all have different kinds of shavers. Do you remember in the old commercials? Maybe they still do it. They talk about lift and cut of how as the rotary blade spins, there's a second one that grabs the hair, pulls it, and then comes along.
Cuts it. Cut.
So it depends how this is made. If it's the kind of cut of where you basically have two blades, two razor blades, the first one basically lifts up the hair and the second comes and cuts it, that would be a problem because that's a razor cut. The many, many, many electric shavers have what's called a scissor cut of where you have one that's a stationary blade, one that's a stationary piece, and the other is what rotates. And when the hair gets caught between the stationary thing and the whirling blade, it's a scissor. What it is that's what a scissor is. You have one blade that goes up against the second blade. It's not a razor. It's a stationary that then gets cut like this. A scissor cut is not a problem. That's what my electric shaver is. That's what many, if not most, unless you really bought a high-end one, most of your regular run-of-the-mill that you get at Target, Braun, and most of them are scissor cut, which would not be a problem because the Torah only forbids a razor.
So what about before those existed? So nobody was clean shaven?
Scissor.
But that you can only get so close.
Exactly the point. Exactly the point. The Torah does not want it to be destroyed. Yes, the whole rationale, I shouldn't say it that way, a rationale. I'm not suggesting I am God and I know exactly. But this is a rationale that is presented, that when the Torah uses the terminology, do not shave, the real word in the Torah is lehashchis, which means to destroy. Don't destroy the hair of your beard. The only way that can be that close, that it's destroyed, is with a razor. Anything less than that doesn't get so close, it's not really destroyed. In fact, even on my best day, of where I let it grow long, and then I give it a great shave, which is my absolute best, as close, you can still see the black, well, now gray, dots, right? It's not that close, because that's what a scissor cut is all about. The Torah only forbids the razor on the beard. Yes, Arlene.
Okay, so we're talking about the Jews going across the desert. All the men have scissors with them to do this?
Maybe they don't. It's irrelevant.
Was scissors even invented back then?
Well, it could have been a flint stone. It could have been anything that they used to shave. I guarantee you that we are not the first people that came up with the idea of shaving. This was invented long before you and I were thought of. I don't know if they had metal scissors. I don't know. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. But they had some way of... Did they all look like cavemen with no haircuts for at least 80 years? Hard to believe. That's hard to believe. They must have had some way of cutting their hair. That's what we do. Since the beginning of time, we've learned how to cut.
Rabbi, the Egyptians had the shaving. I mean, even before, when Joseph went before Pharaoh,
there's no question that the Torah itself talks about it. Exactly one of my things I'm going to get to a little bit later, of when Joseph was taken out of prison and brought before Pharaoh after interpreting the baker and the wine steward's dreams, the Torah specifically says he washed and he shaved before he came before Pharaoh. Now, does that mean he was clean shaven? Not necessarily, but it means he cleaned up. He trimmed. But he definitely did something to make the hair on his head nicer. Clearly, that was done. Of course, they had some way of doing it. Is it the fancy scissors that we have with the little pinky thing that you have? You know, you get the hold at the corner of the scissors. I don't know if they had it that fancy, but they certainly had something to do it. So here the Torah prohibits the razor on the beard and, in general, even scissor action, so to say, to the point of where it's destroyed above the bone. Okay? That's why, as Jews, we have sideburns, because we're letting the corners of our head remain, as well as not putting a razor to our beard. That's the basics. Okay? That's why, again, I say there are plenty of very observant people who are clean shaven. Not a problem. They have violated no law in the Torah. Are we clear on this point? Any questions? Because we're going to take it another level. Go ahead, millionaire.
No, you kind of answered it, because I was going to ask you way at the beginning. When they refer to a razor, aren't they talking about a razor blade, a straight edge, as opposed to an electric razor? And because I know that I used to shave with a razor, and that was a very close shave. And I went to a Norelco or Remington, then went to a Norelco later. Right. And there's still stubble even after I shaved.
Correct.
So it's it's not that close.
Correct.
So I did not realize that the razor blade that I was, the electric razor was actually scissor cutting it. As opposed
to... Oh, it's interesting. You're right, Fred. I will tell you this, and I don't mean to drive you crazy, but even on those electric shavers, like I have, right, of where the blades, the technology nowadays has these blades are so sharp. They're like really super sharp. I tried cleaning it once. You know, you're able to unscrew the heads and you can wash them because, you know, hair gets caught in them. I literally nicked my finger. It's so sharp. It's sharp. So I once asked somebody here in Baltimore, a great rabbi who really is up to speed on all of this. And he said to me, there are many authorities who say that even in the scissor cut kind of shavers, if the blade is so sharp, it really is ostensibly being like a razor. He says there's a way to, he used the word dull it, so that it's not as sharp, because we're addressing the same problem. If it really is ostensibly being a razor, it presents a problem. So but that's what he said. I'm just throwing it out there for you. My job is to sensitize you to what this mitzvah is all about. Okay? So that's the basics. Yes, Robin.
I just want to make sure, because you might go further, but the not rounding off the corners of the head, is that based on the reasoning is because you don't want to be like the pagan cultures, or we're going to have additional reasons?
Both are correct. I have presented it as the basics, and now we're about to take it a step further.
And Rabbi, one quick question too, all of you, because I, for some reason, I also thought you're not supposed to use a razor on the exact middle of the back of your neck. I for some reason in high school, I thought I heard somebody once tell me, I knew about the sideburns, but I also thought that you couldn't use a straight edge razor. And whenever I used to get a haircut, I used to tell them, you can scissor the back, but don't use any kind of a straight edge on the back of the neck. And I don't even have one.
I'm not really sure why that would be. It could be that you're already getting into the more of the Kabbalistic thing of that.
Isn't that where the bone on the back of the neck is that is the supposed to bring you back later?
Yes.
I thought it had something to do with that.
So it could be. That's above my pay grade. I'm not familiar with that. But to the best of my knowledge, the razor prohibition is exclusively to the beard area.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Go ahead, Chuck.
What about those trimmers that you put a plastic thing on so it doesn't trim all the way down?
I'm sorry. I was looking at what... Say that again, Wayne.
If you use a trimmer where you can put the plastic guide on so it doesn't go all the way down to your face.
No problem. It's no problem, because the trimmers in particular, they are two blades, one in front of the other, and they're just crisscrossing like this. That's all they're doing. That's your classic scissor. Isn't that? If you do it in slow motion.
Right.
It even looks like it. That's for sure not a problem.
Okay.
Go ahead, Chuck.
Does the Torah specifically say razor?
No. Good question. The Torah does not use the word razor. But as I'm trying to show you, the fact that in the same sentence, it changes the terminology, the Talmud asks, why? Why use a different word, a different adjective? It's really a verb. What you shouldn't do in the same verse where you said, don't do that to the head, you changed it when you talked about the beard. So the Talmud shows from other places that when you use the word tashchis, which means to destroy, it means a cutting that destroys. The only thing that we're aware of that is that close, that it destroys the hair completely, is a razor. There is nothing else that qualifies as a destruction of the hair. Nothing gets that close. So you're right. It doesn't say it explicitly as the word razor, but there is no other term that fits the verse. That's how the Talmud, it's one of the pieces that the Talmud uses. Okay. But let's take this a step further and not get bogged down necessarily with the technical aspects. Let's take a step back and try to understand what is it the Torah is trying to teach us with these mitzvos. So you've heard me speak many, many times. Who is my go-to? I know which story, but who is my go-to? Like, I need to get a global perspective. I always turn to Rav Shamshon Rafal Hirsch, Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch. He is my go-to. I love his commentary. Difficult reading, but absolutely fascinating. He makes the following observations. I'm going to read you a couple of paragraphs, but I want you to zero in on this. Okay? Listen to what he writes. He's bothered. Why is it that the Torah is forbidding? Let's talk about the corners of our head. We'll get to the word corners a little later, Susan. I got more to say about it. But, okay? We're talking about the corners of your head. If you really want, again, I'm doing the side view. If you put your finger on that bone and you go straight up and over your head to the other side, to the other bone, that line that you just drew, believe it or not, no doctors here, so no one can contradict me, but there's actually a fissure in your brain that goes along that line that separates the front part of your brain, the cerebrum, to the back part of your brain, the cerebellum. Did you know that? Nope. Check it out. Go Google it later. Not now, Monroe. Google it later. There is right across the line. I should really bring down. My daughter is studying for physical therapy. And so she's got to know all this part. And there's a beautiful picture right there of the skull. And it shows that line right across the top. Listen to what Rav Hirsch writes. He says, clearly, the Torah forbids the removal of the externally visible division between the frontal part of the head and the rear part of it, coinciding with the cerebrum and the cerebellum, respectively. Now, Rav Hirsch lived in the 1800s. This is not somebody who just passed away, who had all medical science, but we knew at that point already about certain aspects of anatomy and physiology. And Rav Hirsch was up to speed on all of this. The division is in a fissure which runs vertically between the forehead and the parietal bone, which is in the back, right about here, above the temples in front of the ears. Listen to what he writes. The hair at the temples is right over here, is accordingly a natural veiling which hides the view of the back of the head in the human countenance. If you leave this part growing, this part right here, right? You basically have a natural division between your forehead, which everybody has without hair, to the back of your head, which everybody has, unless eventually it falls out. But we naturally, as human beings, we have no hair on our forehead and we have hair in the back. Keeping a division, a patch of hair, is a reminder that there's a difference between the front of your head and the back of your head. Let him continue. But the relation of the frontal part of the skull containing the cerebrum to the back part with the cerebellum is that of the human element to the animal element in human beings. You know what goes on in the front part of your brain? Fascinating. My wife, God bless her. My wife is a nurse manager at Sinai Hospital here in Baltimore. And she's been working in the rehab unit. She runs two inpatient rehab units. She's the manager over both, but she spent pretty much most of her career in that field. So she knows about strokes and aneurysms and brain bleeds and all of things that are related to brain rehabilitation, as well as hips and knees and all that. That's the other side that deals with other kind of physical rehabilitation. So I asked her about the front part versus the back part, the cerebrum versus the cerebellum. She said to me, in the front part is where impulse control is primary. Impulse control. And she reminded me, my father-in-law, may he be well, he had a brain injury about 16 years ago, almost 16 years ago. And the accident occurred because he was hit in the front, right at the top, front part of his head. And one of the major issues that he has ever since been dealing with is impulse control. Now you say, but why is that important? Well, what's the difference between an animal and a human? The number one difference is whether you can control your impulse, whether you can control your desire for something. An animal has a desire and it goes for it. There's no rationalizing with them. There's no reasoning with them. There's no telling them today's a fast day. You can't have it. You can't tell them, sorry, pork is out. You can't have it. You got to take that away from your diet. You can't tell that to an animal. An animal doesn't have impulse control. It wants, it gets. A human being has to learn control. Not to say always yes, and not always to say no. You have to control it. The area that of your brain that is most human is your front, the cerebrum. The cerebellum controls your bodily functions, the nerves, how your arms react, and all of that stuff takes place in the back. The front is decision-making. Impulse control. Fascinating. The Torah wants you to always remember there's a difference between the front and the back. And the way you're constantly reminded of this is where you have a division. You can't see the fissure under your skull. You can't see that line that's there that separates the front from the back. But when you have to keep hair as a divider between the front, your forehead, and the back, that will remind you of remaining human and not becoming animal. This is the premise that Rav Hirsch works with, and he develops it further. Listen to this. And so here again, we meet the importance and weight with which the teaching of the sanctifying of our lives lays on keeping vividly in our minds the existence of these two specifically different elements of man's nature and of the higher dignity of the intellectual, moral, spiritual factor to which the animal factor has to subordinate itself and be kept in the background. What a great wording. We keep the animal side of us in the background. The front, what should take center stage, is our human element, our ability to use our free will to make moral, spiritual, correct choices. It is in the former alone in which man is to recognize his appearance as man. The hair down the temples is an admonition for man to be man, not animal. Wow, what an insight. Go ahead, Muriel.
Does any of this have anything to do with the fact that when an infant is born, they have a soft spot, which is open, and as they get older, it closes up, the front to the back?
I've had that question. I have not had the opportunity to ask somebody who I respect who would know, but my heart tells me the answer is yes. Why? Because if you understand this concept, the infant does not have that part of their brain fully developed yet. It's not matured yet. So, of course, there's a soft spot, so to say. There's an underbelly that it's undeveloped. It has to become one. It has to grow into it. Okay. I, in my heart of hearts, I believe that that is the case. But here's what's interesting about this. Whether you're male or female, infant or older person, we all have hair down the sides here. Even infants, even when they're born bald, like most Nachmans are. It's pretty amazing. We start bald and we end bald. All right, so he goes. Okay, that should be the worst, right? But it's everybody has it. Why? Because man, woman, child, adult, we are all human given this lesson of developing the front and not the back, keeping the back in check, and that there always be a distinction between the front and the back, and don't lose ourselves to become more of an animal than we are a man. Brad, you had a question.
Yeah. And I've been thinking about this for a long time, because every time I would put on tefillin when I was taught, and even in Israel, they were very specific about where the tefillin goes up here. Very specific about where it is on the muscle. Now, I read something years ago about something else, but, and this may be Kabbalistic, but is it anywhere in any kind of writings, is there any ever thought that by placing the tefillin exactly, that the human body is built in such a way that by placing that tefillin on the forehead at a precise point, communication between the body, or man, more than likely the body, and Hashem is a connection? I mean, is there any thoughts along that line?
Yes and no. I can't say for sure that it's specifically for communication. What I did find, someone had forwarded to me many years ago, that there was a journal of Chinese medicine that did a study from a pressure point. What's it called?
Acupuncture.
Like acupuncture. Of where the tefillin sit on your head and how the straps come down the back, on the sides of your head, and meet at that point in the back, and the straps coming down your front, and the arm, the seven wrap, it literally goes through, it touches this point, this point, this point. It is, according to this journal, it's not a Jewish journal. This is the Journal of Chinese Medicine. It came to the conclusion that the wearing of tefillin is the perfect formula for mental clarity.
Wow.
Yeah. I should send it to y'all. It's a fascinating, yeah, I don't understand half of what they're talking about, because I don't know anything about acupuncture. And it's hitting on the 2B and the 4F and the whatever. Okay, you got me, right? But whatever it is, it's touching all the right points for mental clarity. Was I shocked by this? Not one bit. Not one bit. The Torah is not just some group of gobbledygook that some deity decided to just test us. Let's see. What can I throw at these humans? They're so gullible. I'm going to get them to eat crackers I'm going to call it matzah, right? I'm going to have them, swing a chicken before Yom Kippur. There's reasons for all of this. It is to our benefit. So the fact that medicine and science has come to great conclusions, that they finally figured it out, okay. So Judaism got a 3,000-year head start on them. Okay, they're catching up.
It's our instruction manual for the human body.
It is, but it's an instruction manual from the inventor.
Right.
It's not some dude. It's not some dude on Google who decided to write a quick cheat sheet.
Right.
This is from the inventor himself. So of course it works. Of course it provides all what we need. It's not shocking, but it's fascinating to see. Okay. He continues with this whole concept. And he says the same is true with the beard. Okay, whatever. I don't want to go into all of it. But the concept that there needs to be a distinction, that the hair on our head is what reminds us of our human aspect, as opposed to the other elements which we have are more animalistic. It's not a negative, it's a reality. Man is comprised of human elements and animal elements. We eat, we sleep, we procreate. I mean, we do things like animals too. Nothing wrong with it, as long as it's understood who's in front and who's in back. Let the soul, let man's spiritual side give direction, and then let the body do what it needs to do. That's a perfect harmony of what we're supposed to be. Hence the front, the cerebrum versus the back, the cerebellum. That's the basic, how he takes it. Okay? Let's keep going. I want to argue, and I didn't confirm this with anybody. This is my own connection. And so I publicly reserve the right to retract this if I find out I'm wrong. But it's fascinating. Listen to this. There's another element to hair. It's not limited in terms of the mitzvah we're talking about is the one on the head. The head, meaning the corners of the... Oh, I didn't talk about corner. Thank you, Susan. What's up with corners? right? We'll appreciate this even more now. Why would we use the term the corners of your head? Last I checked, most of us have a round head. Maybe some of it is more oval, but it is not square. In fact, that was one of the greatest insults you could have given somebody when you were back in middle school. Call them a square, right? We're round. Why would the Torah use the corners?
Is it related to like the harvest?
Come on, Lizanovich, you got this. Come on. What are you talking about?
Yes, that is my nickname, Lizanovich. Where you leave the corners of the harvest for
corners of the fields, yeah.
For the poor and needy.
So is it like to remind us of that obligation?
Oh, you are so good, Liz. That's awesome. You intuited.
Yay!
You intuited. Hey, you're biased. You stay out of it.
My mother didn't raise any stupid children.
Listen to this. You're really onto something. Let's talk about that for a second. That's really great insight. There is a concept. There's another mitzvah in the Torah, which we touched on extremely briefly when we first started this, when we talked about other agricultural mitzvos. There is a mitzvah in the Torah that if you own a field and you're growing whatever the crops you're growing, you're obligated to leave a certain percentage of the corners of the field unharvested. You cannot harvest it. It's not like other aspects of where you harvest and give a certain percentage away. No, the corners of the field remain unharvested. Let the poor come in on their own, pull whatever apples they need for the day, and come back tomorrow and pick whatever they need. And everybody's welcome to it. Okay? You have to leave a corner of the field for the poor. Listen to how this is different than any other agricultural mitzvah. Every other one, for example, the Torah says that if I'm harvesting my field, let's say I'm harvesting corn. Okay, I like corn, love fresh corn, and we're harvesting. And I go ahead and I got my bundles of corn stalks, and I'm gonna go ahead and I'm gonna take the corns and do what I gotta do, right? And one or two sheaves fall down to the ground. The Torah says, don't bend down to pick it up. Leave it. Leave it for the poor. If one or two fall, leave it. It's not significant enough that it's so costly that you should go get. No. If three fall, that's already you've crossed the line. You're allowed to go pick up all three. But one or two, fine. Similarly, if I'm gathering my bundles, I put together a bundle here and a bundle there and another bundle, and I've got bundles all over the place. And I go, now I'm going to take all the bundles. I drive my cart and I take a bundle and I take a bundle and I forget a bundle. I forgot one bundle. Leave it. Don't go back to the other side of the field to go get it. Leave it for the poor. Similarly, I go ahead and I bring now all this corn in and I calculate that I got 100 bushels of corn. The Torah says you have to give a certain percentage to the Kohen, certain percentage to the Levite, certain percentage to the poor. You have tithes to give. Okay, so I go ahead and I take off 10% and I decide I'm going to give it to poor man Jack. Give it to poor man Jack. Okay, he and his family, they need it. And I go ahead and I decide. Next season, I process and I harvest, I don't know, corn again. Okay, I don't do corn, but I do soybean. And now I got 10% of soybean. And I say, you know what? I gave poor man Jack last time. I'm going to give poor woman Sally, I'm going to give her this time. And I go, I can choose to give it to her. As opposed to the corner of my field. The corner of my field I do not harvest and say, oh, I'll give it to Mr. So-and-so or Ms. So-and-so. No, it remains completely, completely unharvested. You leave it alone. Why? Rabbi Eisenman in Ner Yisrael, one of my teachers, asked this as a question. He wants to know what makes the mitzvah of leaving the corners of your field so different and drastic from the others. He says, such a beautiful idea. He says, all the other gifts that we give to the Kohen, to the Levi, to the poor. I am the rightful owner, and I'm given the right to choose who I want to give it to. I have that choice. I want to give it to poor man Jack. I can give it to poor man Jack. If I decide to give it to poor woman Sally, I can give it to poor. But I am the owner, and I can, to some degree, decide who I want to give it to. However, comes along the mitzvah of peah, comes along the mitzvah of leaving the corners of your field, and reminds us, you are not the owner. You are not really the owner of this field. God is. You are. You see, when you go ahead and you harvest and you give a percentage to so-and-so, there's a certain bias, there's a certain ownership that you feel. You're the master, and I can decide. I will decide whether I want to give you $100 for tzedakah today, or I only want to give you 50. That's up to me, because it's my decision. I retain some right, and I'm an active participant. I'm the master to some extent. When it comes to the corners of the field, we don't give anything. We abandon. We let it go. They, the poor, are the masters of the field. I, as the owner of the field, am completely irrelevant. I don't get to decide who to give it to, how much to give. No. The corners are what they are, and anybody can come in and take it. I don't like that poor guy. It's not your choice. It's not your call. The mitzvah of leaving the corners of your field is a reminder that ultimately you are not the master. All of your stuff is not really yours. What a great lesson when you use the same word to describe the corners of your head. Your head is the seat of your intellect. The head is the seat of your decision-making and your focus and your priorities in life. All of your intellectual abilities are really not yours. We are not the true masters. They all belong and they come from a gift from God. I have to leave a corner of my head, because ultimately it's a reminder that if I have the capability, I can learn something. I can teach something. I can figure out something. I'm a successful business person. Where do those gifts come from? They're a gift from God. So I leave the corners of my intellect like I leave the corners of my field to remind me. It's not surprising, therefore, that the numerical value of the word peah, corner, is 86. 86 is the same numerical value of Elohim, God. Yeah, put that in your pipe and smoke it, right? That's real, man. That's right, because the corners of our heads are the reminder of the gifts of our intellect that God has given us. Hence, we dedicate and remind ourselves of a corner. Those gifts were given to us by God. Okay, Susan, did that bring it a little better for you? Okay. I'm not done with you. I still have a couple of minutes. Great, excellent. Okay, here's where I want to change tracks a little bit. Let's take everything I told you for the last 50 minutes or so and put it on the side. Let's start the conversation again about hair. Let's talk about hair. Can you name me either stories you know of in the Torah, people you know in the Torah, who hair played a very important role in their life?
Samson.
Samson is a good choice. Samson, as the story we're told in Tanakh, Shimshon was a leader of the Jewish people who had a special power. He was what's known as a Nazir, a Nazirite, who is forbidden, according to Torah law, to cut his hair while he's still a Nazirite. He can't drink wine, he can't cut his hair, so he had these long, 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 beautiful locks of hair. Long story short, and that is, he was a warrior who took on the Philistines single-handedly, ultimately was victorious in many ways, but lost his life in the end. He gave away the secret of his power, the fact that he had this long hair, He told it over to this woman named Delilah, and she told the Philistines how to defeat Samson by cutting his hair. They cut his hair, and of course, he lost his strength. And okay, that's the story. Who else?
Absalom.
Who else was a hairy brute?
Absalom.
Good. Absalom, one of King David's sons.
Esau.
I was hoping we would get there. Yeah. Okay. Esau, Jacob's brother, Jacob's twin. I mean, if you talk about non-identical twins, man, you found the perfect pair. Yaakov and Esau, Jacob and Esau, they are night and day. They are opposites, like, wow. But the Torah tells us very little about their characteristics, meaning their physical attributes when they're born, except for one thing. Esau is born first, but he's born hairy, full of hair, and Yaakov is smooth-skinned, no hair. Really? This is what's critical to know about our perhaps one of the most important stories in the Torah. One's a hairy brute, and one's not. So most of you are aware, because that piece of information plays itself out in a very important story of where Jacob wants to get the blessings from Isaac, and he thinks, remember, Isaac is blind, so he has to, quote, dress up like Esau. So his mother gives him goat skin to put on his arms, right, so that in case Isaac, who hears the voice of Jacob, says, who's that? He can honestly, oh, come, look, feel me, Dad. And he can feel it, and he says, oh, feels like Esau. Okay. Avshalom, David's son, who doesn't have a very noble place in our history. Esau doesn't have a very noble place in our history. Samson is a different story, but has a similar characteristic. What you find is that hair is a point of arrogance, is a point of conceit, an entanglement with sin. I know, again, we put our previous conversation off to the side for a minute, but you do find in many cases that an association with hair gets people in trouble. I don't think it's a stretch, but even in today's world, the fact that there's such sensuality associated with hair, many car commercials, right, have beautiful ladies in it who flip their hair in the course of that advertisement, in the course of that commercial. Or if you've ever seen, I mean, if you think about it, it's ludicrous. We watch commercial after commercial for hair products, for shampoo. Oh, for goodness sake. It's just shampoo. It's a multi-billion dollar industry. It's just shampoo. And what's crazy to me, as I'll get off my shampoo box in a second, is do people get into a room and say, what's a crazy ingredient we haven't used yet? Let's see. Let's dig up, I don't know, Beetlejuice. Let's try Beetlejuice and coconut oil. That's got to be great for the hair. I mean, just like every time I go down that aisle, I'm just astounded. Who tried this to see if this really, like, why would you put some of this stuff in your hair? It's like, why? Okay, that's why I'm a rabbi and I'm not in marketing. Okay, but okay, I'm back off my shampoo box. Okay, but what they do is they make it so sensual. Like, you know, from a guy's perspective, he's like salivating at this gorgeous head of hair that this beautiful girl has. Why?
Well, yeah, why is hair that sensuous?
Ah, because, as I'm showing you, because hair has the potential to be a draw for sin. It is a powerful tool to entangle a person away from what's important. In the opposite of what we said earlier.
Yes.
Whereas I said earlier from Rav Hirsch that the hair on the head is the demarcation not to fall prey to what's in the back of your head. Stay away from the animalistic. I would argue that hair has a second component, that if it's not used in that way of a mark staying away from it, it has the potential to draw you further into trouble. And I'll show you all these examples. Esau, born with hair, versus Yaakov, smooth skin. Why? Why? Okay, I get it. It's an interesting characteristic and it plays itself out, but I'm sure God could have thought of other things. How about their voices? Change the voices a little bit. I don't know. Make Yaakov have a lisp and Esau speaks clearly, or vice versa. I mean, God could arrange this in a million different ways. Why specifically with hair? And Monroe, while we're at it, what happened to Avshalom? What was his ending?
Oh, he got caught in the tree there with his hair.
His hair! He had long, beautiful hair, and he was arrogant about it. And what happens is he's chasing David. He's up against David. He's waging this battle against David. And his hair gets stuck, entangled in a branch. And he's hanging by his hair and ultimately is killed. But wait, I'll show you from the flip side that the removal of hair acts as a means of protection. Or say it better, as a point of to remove oneself from being entangled with sin. I'll share with you, any Levites here? Any Levites? No Levites, okay. Well, in the old days, if you were a Levite and you were being initiated into the temple service, the Torah says as part of that initiation process, you had to shave all the hair on your body, your head, your eyebrows, your beard, all of it. All of it had to be shaven. Why? That's a strange ceremony to be welcomed into the service of the temple. Some of the commentators are wondering, and some suggest this idea. And that is, if you're going to be dedicating yourself to the service of God, then you have to remove yourself from sin as much as possible. If you're willing to accept that role of working, setting aside my intellect, my personality, myself, I have to be able to stay free from sin. So they removed the hair. Hair can be a draw towards negativity as well. Therefore, Moshe was ordered to shave all the Levites to ensure that they possess that humility, submissiveness that's necessary to fulfill their role in the temple. Who was the instigator against Moshe? There was a classic story of battle of leadership, of authority. A man by the name of?
Amalek?
Oh.
Amalek.
Korach, very good. Yeah. Excellent. Korach wages this war and he says, who said, Moshe, you should be the leader? Why did you choose Aaron to be the leader? I'm from the same line. I should also be. He wages this battle against the authority of Moshe and Aaron. Isn't it interesting? His name is Korach. Anybody know what the word Korach means? If you paid attention to last week's Torah reading in Shul, you read in Parshas Mitzora about Kereach. Kereach means a bald spot. In fact, in modern Hebrew, ice is called Kereach because it's smooth. It's got like no, it's like without hair. It's smooth, like my forehead. He's called Korach. He wasn't willing to accept. He wrote, so to say, the bald one. He was a Levite. He wanted the authority, but he wasn't willing to accept that role. And he only wanted the top position. There's many others. It would explain why during our period, God forbid, if somebody is a mourner, they lost one of their seven close relatives, parent, sibling, spouse, or child, God forbid. You don't cut hair, right? We let our hair grow long. We don't get haircuts. We don't shave. Why? Right? During the period that we're in now, counting of the Omer, many people have the custom not to shave or get haircuts. The 3 weeks, which is right before Tisha B'Av, same idea. during times of mourning, we don't cut our hair. Why? Because it's a time to focus internally, make, you know, resolutions about my commitment to Torah, to God. We just lost somebody. Ay, how am I going to replace this wonderful person who has passed on? What am I going to do to promote their legacy? Similarly, I'll just throw two more things at you. How often are you obligated to get a haircut? That's a trick question.
Not at all.
When?
Never.
Well, it depends. Depends. If you're the king of the Jews, if you are actually the melech, then you actually have an obligation to take a haircut every
7 years?
Day.
Okay. Oh. Here's your reminder.
Every day. Yeah. That means, you say, wait, what do you have to cut every day? It means you have to be trimmed every single day. Fred. The king must do it. Why? Oh, why? What a crazy law. Why would the king need a haircut every day? Because who is the most susceptible to risk of becoming power hungry, of becoming arrogant, of becoming entangled in thinking you are the ultimate authority on everything? The king. It's the same reason why the king has a special mitzvah to keep a Torah with him wherever he goes. Did you know that? The king has to keep a little Torah with him at all times because he's the most at risk of falling prey to thinking he's above the law. That sense of arrogance that we can't have. Therefore, he needs a constant reminder. Shave and a haircut every day. Don't let the hair draw you in for sensuality and draw you away from what's important. And finally, and we'll piece it all together in a minute. I mentioned, or someone mentioned here, that Joseph, we mentioned Joseph when he got called up to go to Pharaoh to interpret his dream, he took a shave and a haircut and he washed his clothing and he took a shower. But what I didn't tell you is that prior to that whole story, when Joseph was but a 17-year-old teenager and his brothers don't like him, right? Remember that? The beginning of the story. This is how he gets sold ultimately down to Egypt. But the Torah tells us, remember, he's 17, and yet the Torah calls him a na'ar, calls him a lad, a youth. It's not the word that you would expect to see. At 17, the Torah already considers you an adult. Why would it use a strange word of he's a youth? So Rashi tells us from an early source that Rashi says that he behaved with immaturity and a self-centeredness, and he used to play with his hair. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. I never really understood that, Rashi. Like, okay, he played with his hair. So what? I play with my pillow when I lay down. So what? Why is that a sign of anything? Like, okay, so he played with his hair, twirled it, who knows? Like Arlene, they probably didn't shave too much. You know, that's what it is. They played. No, because it's a sense, if you're so focused on your hair, like Avshalom, like Esav, like all these, that means you're focused on you, your self-centeredness. That's what hair could represent. That's a sign of immaturity. That's why the Torah calls Yosef at that point a na'ar. He's just a lad. So where does that leave us? Go ahead, Muriel.
There seems to be a contradiction.
That's where I'm going.
Okay. All right. Then I'll,
on the one hand, I just got through spending time telling you how hair is the protection from trouble, how hair is the reminder of staying human and not animal. And now I just presented to you the counter argument of where hair is a draw for sensuality, is a draw for entanglement with sin. It leads you into trouble. That's what makes the Nazarite so unique. He purposely lets his hair grow, but you know what he does at the end of his period of Nazariteness? He has to shave his hair. So make up your mind, Tachman. Is hair a good thing or is hair a bad thing? That's your question, right?
No. My question was related. Is if hair is a bad thing,
not
then
bad.
Why don't you shave your head when you're mourning? Why do you not cut your hair?
Great. So let's put this all together. let's put it all together and I think we'll understand this. I want to argue that there's a difference between the hair on your head and the hair on the rest of your body. I want to say this following distinction. Again, I reserve the right to come back to this, but this is my understanding that I came to today, because I was faced with this problem. On the one hand, hair represents positivity of where it keeps us in check. But on the other hand, hair seems to be a drawing away from it and getting us into trouble. So I think the answer is as follows. If we're talking about the hair on your head, the head is clearly the part of the body that is the most spiritual. That's what we always associate. We've spoken about this concept that it houses your brain. It houses your ability to understand lofty concepts. From your shoulders down is basically what we have in common with all other animals. We have a torso, we have a heart, we have arms, we'll call them legs or forearms, whatever it is. We have reproductive organs. I mean, this from the shoulders down is physicality. From the neck up, I can see it much more associating with spirituality. Therefore, if the primary part of your body you want to keep pristine, meaning your head, then you need to put in safeguards and to understand that there's a difference between the front and the back, and that your head, which is the house of spirituality, you need to have safeguards. But on the rest of your body, the part that is animalistic, I want to take away the hair as much as possible. Why? Because the hair only feeds into that concept of physicality, sensuality. On the head, you hear my distinction? It's somewhat subtle, but I want you to hear it. On the head, your hair, while it could be a distraction, could serve as a very strong reminder of who you are, and it could veil, it could cover the animalistic parts. Hence, you have hair on this part going backwards. Cover the animal side, leave open the human side, the spiritual side. The rest of your body is, for all intents and purposes, physicality. Don't feed into it. You're not going to cover your whole head, your whole body. The whole body doesn't get covered in hair. In theory, if we were more animalistic, we would have, like every other animal, the hair would cover the body from tail all the way up to the head. But we're not. We're human. And therefore, the hair on the body should be removed to remind us that it's not after the physicality. It's not after the sensuality. So in effect, hair on the body, it depends where it is. On the head, I want it on the head. I want it there to remove any sense of animalistic and self, you know, all about me. It's not. The rest of my body, remove it. Take it off. That's why the Levites had it removed. That's why when the Nazirite is ready to come back into society, we remove the hair because he has to come in contact with people again. It's not all about you. This is the distinction I would like to make. It's a subtle idea, and maybe I'm not explaining it as well as I could, but I think at the kernel, that's really where it's at. There's a difference between the hair on your head versus, and that's why there's a mitzvah specifically not to get rid of the hair on your head. Don't round the corners of your head and shave, destroy the corners of your beard. There's no such mitzvah on the rest of my body. Go ahead. You want to shave your chest? Shave your chest. Go for it. No problem. Shave your legs? Shave your legs. It's no problem. That's not an issue. Go ahead. Go ahead, Fred.
Did I miss something at the beginning when you were talking about the Levites? I thought you said as they to come into that, they had to completely shave their body of eyebrows, head, as I remember.
Correct.
So now, isn't there a contradiction with Correct. That?
Correct. In that case, there's the added element of where I'm removing all barriers so that you understand that you're subservient to God. There is no self. If hair represents self, right? Because that's what it does. I remove all that hair. I want no self. I want you to be a selfless servant to God. If it means for a short period of time to initiate that you lose even the hair on your head, so be it. But it's a sense of humility and removing any sense of self.
Okay, so then afterwards, it grew back. That was, they allowed it, the hair to grow back.
Yes.
Right? It was just the initiation correct. Into it. And then just let it grow.
That's correct.
Okay.
Just the initiation. Yes, Robin.
I'm sort of a little confused and following up a little bit of what Burial said. So if you let your hair grow because you're in mourning and you don't cut your hair because that, I guess I'm not, well, this is my problem. That, and then you said that like people like the ones that had long hair in the Bible, they had their hair that was flipping and it was long and that was bad. So why would you let your hair grow, which would make it long, to mourn, and then Absalom and whoever had the long hair, and that was bad?
It's not a time to be focused on how you look. If you're focused on your hair, long or short, that means you're focused on yourself. Even going ahead and trimming, cutting your hair, making sure that you look good, that's a focus on one's self. Basically, the Torah is saying in a time of mourning, forget about your hair. It's not about you right now. Your hair is long, let it be long. Your hair is short, let it be short. Don't focus on your hair. It's not about you. Hair equals selfishness. Don't worry about your hair. One of the things that you walk into a house of mourning, what do they have covered?
Mirrors.
Why? Mirrors.
So you can't look at yourself.
Right? Why?
So you don't focus on yourself. You're focused on
that. Don't worry about what you can't. It's because that's not where your focus needs to be for that time. You need to be focusing on your loss, on the person that has passed on. What are you going to do to replace that person? What are you going to commit yourself and dedicate? It's not about you, how you look, how you feel. Forget about your hair. That's what the Torah is saying. Don't focus on your hair. It's not a matter of I purposely let it grow long. I don't want it long. I'm just not focusing on my hair. It's not about self.
Okay. So
1 second.
So you don't, yes, I'm still trying to understand. So you don't want, like you said, you wanted the hair here, but you don't want it on the rest of your head. I'm still trying to.
Are you talking about a mourner? Or
No, in general now, because I'm still a little confused. I don't know. Something about it confused me because it was good, it was bad. I don't know where I am. I tried to follow it, but I'm not 100% there.
Okay, so let me try it once again. Hair has two potential qualities, meaning that there's times where the Torah wants us specifically to focus on hair, to make sure that it is the way it's supposed to be. And there are other times where the Torah says, ignore. Forget about it. Get it out of your mind. There are two cases. Sometimes the Torah wants us to focus on hair, and sometimes the Torah does not want us to focus on hair. The times to focus on hair is where it pertains to your head. At times, and again, there are exceptions, like Wayne brought up, who brought up? Wayne? No, Fred brought it up. Okay? Meaning, in the beginning, the Torah says, don't round off the corners of your head. Why? Because I want you to have hair there. I want you to focus that there is hair in that place. There should be hair. Don't ever get to a point of where you have eradicated hair on your head. Why? Because I want it to be there where you focus and ask yourself, why is there hair in that spot? To remind me, there's a difference between my human and my animal side. I want you, says the Torah, focus on hair. Therefore, don't round those corners. There are other times where the Torah says, don't focus on your hair. It's not about that. On the rest of your body, it's not about you. Because that's what hair is. Focus on you. If you're paying attention to your hair on the rest of your body, that means you're focusing on how you look, how it pertains to you. It's more of a sense of self on the rest of your body, not your hair, not your head.
Didn't Samson and Absalom have the hair on their head?
That's correct. They were absorbed with themselves. That's not necessarily a good thing. Okay. They were consumed with their own self-being. Now, Samson, I don't want to get into the whole story, but that was his MO. His MO was to break away, that he shouldn't be viewed as the leader of the Jewish people. He was a renegade. He was a lone fighter, all about himself. So if he was not successful, or the Philistines wanted to do something, they wouldn't take retribution against the Jewish people. They would only go after Samson because he was a one and done. But it was all about self. Hair is about me, self.
I got it.
The Torah says there are times where you shouldn't be focusing on yourself, like when you're mourning. Or that's a sign of immaturity because you're not receptive to others. That was Joseph's problem at age 17. He, quote, played with his hair. He was all focused about what's it going to be like for me. And he didn't take into consideration the feelings of his brothers. It was all about self.
Okay.
Therefore, there are times where the Torah says, shave it off. Don't focus on you. Or let it grow. I don't care. Don't get involved with hair.
Okay, I got it now. Yeah, that helps a little bit. It was just, it was a little confusing.
It was a presentation issue, wasn't you? Go ahead, Susan, and then we'll get to Fred.
I had put this question in the chat, and I think it came from after you were talking about the hair commercials and the sensuality of hair and all of that,
answer your question is yes.
Yeah. Did you read what I had written?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
That is what it's all about.
Okay.
That is one of the rationales as to where the concept of women covering their hair, married women, is because sense of sensuality should be reserved between a husband and a wife. It's not for anybody else.
That was my question.
Between a husband and a wife.
Yeah.
That is part of the basis of it. That is correct.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was actually my question, Rabbi, is why is it that a married woman must cover her hair where, you know, a single doesn't? And I, in other words, it was like the hair is the attraction. But but there's so much other parts of a human body that, you know, eyes, face, I mean, that attracts people. I wondered why the hair.
Now you understand why, because this is what is uniquely human.
Okay.
Think about it this way. This is way more than I had anticipated. And if you have to go ahead. But look at the difference between what the Torah demands of someone covering up on their body and what, let's say, Islam. Let's take a woman in Islam, right? A Muslim woman has to cover her entire face except for her eyes.
Right.
Everything else gets covered. In Judaism, there's no such concept. She is welcome to portray her face. No issue whatsoever. She's welcome to have her hands uncovered. Not necessarily the whole arm, but hands, feet. There's no halacha in the Torah. There's no halacha in rabbinic law that requires a woman to have her hands, feet, and face covered. Why? Yet in Islam, it's an absolute, it's almost a death sentence if you don't. Why? Because in Judaism, the Torah only asks us to cover that which is in common with an animal. If it's uniquely human, I don't need to cover it. The whole point of covering is to say, that's not my essence. That's not who I am. Just like the back of our head gets covered with hair because that's the animalistic side, let it be covered. But the forehead never gets covered with hair. Never. Nobody has hair on their forehead because that's uniquely human. That's what we remind ourselves of our spiritual side. Hands. No creature has the hands we do. These are uniquely human. Feet are uniquely human. There's no reason to cover them. We only cover those parts that we have in common with an animal to remind us that's not who we are. That's not our essence. That's why, in terms of the women, they get beautiful eyes. Yeah, it's sensual. Yeah, I got no problem with attraction. We're supposed to have an attraction. Ding, 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 ding. It's got to work. But not to the sense of it being so. But if I'm looking at what makes you human, that you have a soul, you're not just an animal who just gives into sexual desires, then I have no reason to cover it. That's why the face, the hands, and the feet are not required to be covered at any point. Not for men, not for women. Susan.
I just want to say I'm entirely blown away by what a profoundly advanced neuroscientist Hirsch was.
This is not even, this is a drop in the bucket.
Well, I just wanted to say that part of the brain in the back is where the amygdala is, which is what is called the reptilian brain.
That's exactly.
And
right.
just knowing that's the part that when we're like animals, fight, flight, freeze. Right. That's that.
Not a terrible thing.
Of course we need that part of us. But that's the part that we have with, so it's completely mind blowing and it's so wonderful.
It's only the front mind that's blowing.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes.
Yes. Rabbi, if I may, you know, I don't know who came up to define it called various parts of the body, but I was saying here when we talk about the temple where God is.
There you go. I thought about that years ago. I forgot, but you're right. That's called the temple. That's the point, you know, of where we draw that line. It's a fascinating concept. This mitzvah is such a beautiful, it's not just, oh, I don't want you to shave this way, or I don't want you to. Why? Let's delve. Let's understand better. There's rationales. The Torah is teaching us profound lessons about who we are and what safeguards we need in place. You know, this is all tied in and I, whatever, it's too late already, but you can have this conversation. It leads right into why we wear clothes. I can't not have a class that we don't talk about Garden of Eden, right? What changed in the Garden of Eden pre and post eating from that tree? The only thing that changed is that now they recognize, they knew that they were unclothed. They were naked. So what happens? Now they have clothes. Really? That's the only change? Why do we wear clothes nowadays? Even in climates where you don't need clothing, they still cover the private parts. Why? Because it's all, what do we cover? That which is the animal side, the physicality of that. I want to keep covered. When I meet you for the first time, right? I want to be able to say, oh, look at that person. I get to know them. Do I see? I see barely 90, you know, I don't see 90 plus percent of your body. All I see basically are your hands and your face. You know, most of us wear shoes. I don't even get to see feet. So I see a fraction of the person. You know what my first reaction should be? I really got to get to know this person because I don't know them. I don't know them. All I see is a little part of them. What a great message when you see somebody. But nowadays you see somebody immediately, snap judgment. Look what they're wearing. Look how they look. What are you basing it on? You don't even get to know the character, the personality of the person. Because it's only that animalistic side that we focus on. And that's why it should be covered. When you look somebody straight in the face, you get to know them. Look them straight in the eye and talk to them. You're beginning to see the person. The parts of our body that we cover with hair and clothing are the parts that are the animal side, to remind us that's not our essence. That should be veiled and that should be kept under control. That which is uncovered, your face parts, that's the beginning of the essence of the person. Hence, the Torah gives us this beautiful mitzvah. Don't round the corners of your head. Don't round the corners of your beard. Know who you are. Know your essence. All right. I've held you long enough. Any other questions? This was a deal.
So when you're in mourning, it's only for the week of mourning that you don't shave and don't cut your hair?
It depends. No. For most mourning situations, it's 30 days. unless it's a parent. If it's for a parent, then it can go longer. I'm not going to give you a specific time frame because it depends on how disheveled you look. But for any other mourning, for any of for spouse or siblings or children, it's 30 days. We don't shave or take haircuts. If you say to me there's extenuating circumstances about an important thing, that's a different story. But typically speaking, people don't shave or take haircuts for 30 days of mourning, unless it's a parent, and then it usually goes at least 30, sometimes longer.
As you say Kaddish for a year.
11 months.
But you wouldn't not shave or get a haircut for a year.
You're not obligated to. You're not obligated to. It's a funny story. When I was dating my wife, obviously wasn't my wife yet, and I went to go meet my future in-laws. So it happened to be at that time, my father-in-law had lost his father. So he was in his year of mourning. And my father-in-law in particular does not like to shave and haircuts. It's just not his thing. He hates it under the best of circumstances. So when his father passed away, he basically took that as carte blanche that he's not getting a shave or a haircut for 11 months, 12 months. He was like caveman city. It was like, wow. I met him for the first time. I mean, a big bushy beard and really bushy, but he was bald in front. So he really looked like Bozo the Clown, like just like completely skin up hair and big bushy hair in the back. And then when his year of mourning ended, he decided he was going to shave and get a haircut, but he went whole hog and he took everything off. He took off his mustache. He took off his beard. He took everything off and he came downstairs and my future mother-in-law, we were engaged already at this point. And my future mother-in-law said to him, Emil, you have exactly 4 months to get that mustache back on. You better have that mustache by the time this wedding rolls around. Yes, Candy.
When you said with a parent, it depends how disheveled you look. Were you just being funny or?
No.
Who determines then?
If people come up to you and they make a comment of how really you really don't look great with that, it's out of control, that's already a sign that you can do it. It doesn't put a time frame. In the Code of Jewish Law, it actually says until your friends comment about it. It actually is phrased that way. It doesn't put a time frame. I'll tell you with my own story, and that is, I have two good stories. I really should turn the tape off because this is really not part of this conversation. So I'm just going to stop the tape here 1 second.